Bob Costas has joined us on Sports Byline USA. Bob, we talked a little bit about your love for baseball, but I want to know if this story is true. You once made a promise to Minnesota Twins center fielder Kirby Puckett about naming your son.
Yeah, my wife and I were having lunch with Kirby, spring training, 1986, and I had known Kirby for a few years since he broke in with the Minnesota Twins, and he was irrepressible and always had that smile, and little kids loved him, and he seemed to have a tremendous joy about him at all times. And we were sitting there during spring training in Florida having lunch, and my wife was noticeably pregnant, and he said, "Do you know if it's a boy or a girl?" And we said, "No, we don't know, and we don't want to know, want to be surprised." He said, "Well, have you picked out names yet?" "Well, we got a few in mind, but nothing definite." He said, half joking, "How about Kirby? Works for a boy or a girl?" And I said, "Tell you what, Kirby, if you're hitting 350 when this kid is born, then we'll name him or her after you." Now, at that time, although Puckett was a promising young player, I don't think he'd ever hit higher than like 290 or 295. How did I know that 1986 was going to be his breakout season and that he'd be hitting close to 400 at the time that Keith Costas was born, about a month and a half into the season? And as it was, he was still, although he tailed off a little bit by the due date, he was still hitting over 350. And my wife said, "You know what, we're not naming this kid Kirby." And so we named the kid Keith after her younger brother. And then I started hearing about it because the story had gotten around, and people said, "Hey, you can't renege on this bet. You got to make good on the bet." So what we did was we pulled out the birth certificate and added a second middle name. So his actual legal name is Keith Michael Kirby Costas. And although he's now 26 years old and he works at the Baseball Network, he loves the game just as I do, and although Kirby had some rough times toward the end of his life, and nobody is perfect, Kirby had a lot of really appealing qualities as a person. And it's a shame that he died prematurely because I think he was getting his life back on the right track. And I will say that throughout Keith's life and through most of that, he was a young kid before Kirby passed away, Kirby was extraordinarily kind and sweet to him at all times, just as he always was every time I saw him around children. So he wears that second middle name proudly, and people within baseball still bring it up to him.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I remember when you broke in with NBC, and I was always impressed as how comfortable you looked on the air. Don Ohlmeyer was the man that hired you at NBC. I think you were in your late 20s, about 28 years old. What was it he said that you looked like?
Well, he called me into his office, and he was a very, very charismatic and, from my viewpoint, intimidating figure. He'd already had major success at ABC on Monday Night Football and working with Ruin Arledge. He later went on to run NBC's entertainment division when NBC was the number one network in the 1990s. I mean, he was a major figure in the history of television. So he calls me into his office. I'd been there maybe 3 months. I'm shaking like a leaf. And he says, "You know, we think you do a good job. You're a promising young man. Let me ask you something. How old are you?" And I said, "Well, sir, I'm 28. He said, "Damn it, you look like you're 14. Let me ask you something. How much older do you think you would look if you grew a beard?" That was his brilliant idea. "What if you grew a beard?" And I said, "Oh, 5 years at least." And then he perked up. He said, "5 years, really?" I said, "Yeah, because that's how long it would take to grow it." So that was the end of that idea, and we just struggled along. And here I am, 60, and still facing the same charge, or at least the same description, and I'm still not growing a beard.
You mentioned about the Olympics, Barcelona 1992, your first Olympics, and of course involved ever since then. And I know in Andrew Billings' book, The Olympic Media, Inside the Biggest Show on Television, you say a personal influence has been ABC sports broadcaster Jim McKay. What was it about Jim that influenced you so much?
Yeah, I think that it's not the right idea to directly copy anybody. Maybe when you're first starting out, you do that just to get your feet wet. But no matter how much you admire someone, you don't want to copy them because you'll only then be a pale imitation. But you can be influenced by qualities that people you admire possess. And Jim had a respect for language. He was a writer before he was a broadcaster. He had the keen eye of a reporter, but he also had the enthusiasm of a kid, and he never lost it. It was a genuine enthusiasm. He was enthused to find out what was around the next bend in the road. That's why he was so good with some of these obscure sports and otherwise obscure athletes on Wide World of Sports. He enjoyed telling their stories, and he understood what a narrative was. He understood that a good story had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And on the Olympics or on Wide World of Sports, he could make you understand why you should be interested in this event, which you otherwise wouldn't follow outside the context of the Olympics, and this competitor, who you knew little or nothing about until now, why you should be invested in this competitor or this event. He was a master of that, and he did it with sensitivity, with enthusiasm, but also with a touch of elegance. And those were all personal traits that he had, and I admired that.
Do you see yourself more as a sports journalist rather than a broadcaster?
Oh, I think it's both. I think it's a combination of things. You hope to have a number of arrows in your quiver, and which one you use at any given time depends upon the situation. I don't think that I'm a journalist even close to half the time, but when the circumstance presents itself, I hope I'm capable of playing the role of a newsman, and the subject just happens to be sports. And then there are times when you're a dramatist, and then there are times when you're just basically a host, traffic cop, getting it from point A to point B. And maybe there are some times when you can throw in a little bit of humor and entertain people a little bit. And then there are times when you're just setting someone else up, and it's not your job to score the points, it's your job to notch an assist. And I hope that whatever the situation calls for, I'm able to do a reasonably good job at it.
Well, the reason I asked that question, Bob, is that I think you know that the network sports tends to be a middle-of-the-road medium, but you've never been that way. I go back to the 92 Barcelona games, the 96 Atlanta opening ceremonies, where you had remarks about China's team's possible drug use, and it caused an uproar. But you proved to be correct about that, and a lot of people would not have done that. How do you look upon the possible controversy story?
Well, I think that if something is of significance, and you're well informed about it, and you present it fairly, and you're not dealing in ad hominem attacks and personal insults like so much of what we see and hear today or read on the web or wherever, if it's done with some sort of professionalism, then I think that, at least from my perspective, that's part of my responsibility. Others may view how they broadcast an event differently, but I said to myself, in 92 and 96, if I don't deal with this issue, I don't think anybody else here will. And as you said, what I said proved to be correct. What I've said over the years about steroid use in baseball proved to be correct. I think I still had a very good point about the wild card in baseball, although I modified it over time. I came to see the virtues of the wild card, but I was still correct about the fact that it diminished the importance of the regular season and the drama of a close race for first. Baseball itself tacitly admitted that when they added a second wild card, part of the purpose of which was to put more of a premium on finishing first. So sometimes, not often, and I accept it as coming with the territory, but sometimes people will say, who does he think he is? On the other hand, they're seldom dealing with the merit of the argument. I'm happy to defend what I've said and what I actually believe on the merits of the argument. But if your entire counterattack is, why don't you shut up, I don't think you have much of an argument.
You know as well as I do that television tends to be an impact medium. And you were part of one of the early syndicated radio shows, Costas Coast to Coast. And you had an opportunity to kind of expand on different subjects. When you look at the television medium and the impact aspect of it, because it's visual, and then the verbal medium, which is radio. Tell me a little bit about what you enjoyed about radio.
Well, radio is all about the content. There's not as many bells and whistles. In many ways, it's a more intimate medium. And at the time that I did it, at least when I did it nationally, I'd done it prior to that on KMOX in St. Louis. When I did it nationally from the mid-'80s to the mid-'90s on a syndicated program, then I had a freedom that I didn't have at that time on television. I had 2 hours minus the commercials to pretty much deal with whatever subject matter I wanted to. And at any given time, it could be hilariously funny. It could be something that just relived a recent or game from the distant past or recent past and just be a sports conversation with Terry Bradshaw or Jim Valvano or a rare interview then with Ted Williams. Or it might be journalistic. And I liked the texture of it. I liked the fact that it could be newsworthy, at least a certain portion of the time, and other times it was just flat-out sports entertainment. And then there were times where you really got a glimpse of a person that you wouldn't get in a short soundbite-type interview. I enjoyed that leeway, just as I'm sure you do.
One of the things that I've always respected and admired about you is that you've understood the beauty of sports, the competition aspect of it, the people that play it, even the politics of it as well. And I know that you delivered the eulogy at Mickey Mantle's funeral, and in eulogizing Mantle, you described the baseball legend as a fragile hero to whom we had an emotional attachment so strong and lasting that it defied logic. When you look overall at the people that play the game as well, the game itself, the competition and everything, what is the beauty of sports?
Well, I imagine there are many aspects to its beauty. I think one aspect is that it links generations. David Halberstam put it very well in a book he wrote called The Summer of 49 about the great pennant race between Joe DiMaggio's Yankees and Ted Williams' Red Sox. And he was just a kid then. And he recalled talking about baseball with his father and with his uncles and other men in the neighborhood. And he said, well, they wouldn't really listen to me if I had an opinion about the Marshall Plan, but my opinion about DiMaggio or Williams was worth as much as theirs. And so there you had a situation where a 10- or 12-year-old kid could link with his dad, link with, you know, his uncles or whatever it might be. That's always been part of the appeal of sports, that it's something that interests people of different backgrounds, of different ages. That's part of the appeal. Another part is that I think we all enjoy seeing something done on a big stage that embodies excellence. Now, that doesn't mean that we should confuse athletic excellence with other qualities of character that they're sometimes confused with and it doesn't apply. But to see something done well, to see it done supremely well, to see craftsmanship, or even something that's almost poetically beautiful, great athletes in motion, I think those things lift our spirits. And having said that, that doesn't mean that I'm at all unaware of the corruption in sports, the hypocrisy in sports, the constant issues and conflicts in sports. And I think over the years that I've shown that I can both appreciate what's appealing about sports, but also look with a clear eye at some of the issues in sports.
One of the things that I do know is that when I talk to athletes, I always like to ask them if there's a particular moment in their career that's crystallized in their mind, that when they have a chance to reflect, that it's the one that jumps to their mind first. And I'm going to ask you the same thing. You've seen a lot of great moments in sports, broadcasting them and just witnessing them. Is there one or is there a couple that maybe stick with you more than the others?
I don't know that it was a particular moment, but hosting the Olympics in Barcelona in 92, which was the first time that I was the primetime host, I had been the late-night host in 1988, is an experience that will always be important to me. I liked the way NBC covered that Olympics. Every Olympics is different. It seemed that our coverage of that one was a good combination of an eye toward what was newsworthy and even sometimes controversial, but also rightly emphasizing the drama and the theater of sports. I've always felt that good sports coverage is a combination of those things, and I thought that NBC had a good balance in 1992, and I enjoyed that very much, and I felt like it was a good platform for me, and people seemed to respond to it in a favorable way. So that's one. And the first time I did a baseball game for NBC, I had to pinch myself. Here I am, I'm doing a baseball game on national television. And soon after that, I was doing it with Tony Kubek, a guy I grew up watching play baseball, and then as an adolescent and a young man watched broadcast baseball with Kurt Gowdy and with Joe Garagiola. And here I was sitting next to Tony Kubek and broadcasting postseason baseball. Those are among the many moments where you say to yourself, wow, I must have won the lottery here. I hope that people think that I enjoyed what I did and enhanced their enjoyment watching it, and by taking the work seriously but not necessarily taking the games themselves seriously.
Bob, I want to thank you for your time. Also, just as a witness to your career, I want to thank you for the job that you've done. You left a mark, one that is respected and one that is admired as well. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Ron. It's always good to talk with you.
Bob Costas with us. We continue with more of You and America's Sports Talk Show.